Texas Podcast Massacre contains spoilers and adult language. For more horror, visit us at our website at texaspodcastmassacre.com.
Welcome to another episode of Texas Podcast Massacre, coming to you from Houston, Texas. I'm your host, Mitch, and with me, as always, is my 70s fashion model, Nate.
It's the 60s. Jesus, already starting off. My quote is, do you believe in ghosts? Do you believe in ghosts? If you try,
I was about to spoil it right there and then.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Oh my goodness. And of course, our queen of unsuspecting victims. I don't want to call you the queen of the damned, but it really, at this point, it feels more appropriate.
Fine.
Lisa.
Lisa.
Yes.
Don't die in a plane crash. Don't die in a plane crash. Stop.
Jesus. and we're off. Welcome to another episode of Texas Podcast Massacre, where each week we take a look at a different horror movie and debate a horror-related topic with our unsuspecting victim, who's just someone we would not consider a horror fan. Nate, I mean, Lisa has been pulling duty, representing the unsuspecting victims well. We do need to get on the ball on bringing in some new blood, as it were.
Yeah. Or old blood like this movie. Old blood,
yeah. Oh, well, you know. Yeah, it's, yes. Old blood indeed. This week we are reviewing Last Night in Soho, a movie that I have been so ready for and have been eagerly anticipating. Nate, I think you've been looking forward to it as well. Lisa was, I can't remember, Lisa. Did you originally want to see this movie or
okay.
Did you not
want I like how you went and saw the movie with Lisa, but did not ask her if she wanted to see it beforehand.
Again, her role in this is she doesn't get to. Sorry, you were saying, Lisa.
You first described it to me and I was like, that sounds interesting. Then you showed me the trailer, and for some reason, it was a particularly creepy trailer, and I was like, whew, I don't know. But as time passed, I think I saw a couple more trailers. I saw Anya Taylor-Joy and Matt Smith, and I actually came around to actually wanting to see it. So, yeah. It's rare, but this is one I definitely didn't mind going to see.
Yeah, I tried to soften the blow by saying it's Edgar Wright. This is Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, you kept just telling me Shaun of the Dead guy. It's fine. Yep. I'm like, this does
maybe
not
I overestimate funny, how much you like Shaun of the Dead.
Baby Driver.
I really like Shaun of the Dead.
Baby Driver.
I don't think we've seen Baby Driver.
Oh, also Baby Driver. Yeah, we still haven't seen Baby Driver. It's on the list though.
That's his most like crossover popular movie.
Yeah, it's on a different list than the podcast list, but on a list. So many lists. So.
Hey, so it can be on the podcast list. That's no problem.
Well, we hope you enjoyed our Halloween spooktacular last week. Again, thanks so much to Why I Hate This Album for hanging out with us. We're going to try and catch up with them again soon. If I think we do have a listener request coming up, which should be our next week's episode. So if you are that listener request,
feast for the senses.
Yeah. Kurt Russell, his masterpiece, his, at least I'm excited for you.
Kurt Russell in Overboard.
We're not talking about that movie right now. I'm
that
sorry.
Joke will
We're
never get old.
Lost Line in Soho.
That so joke will never
get old. All right. Well, yeah, Lisa, you're right. We are not talking about Kurt Russell. We are.
No, hold on. We never answered the question. Lisa, did you want to see the movie? Like, how excited were you? You saw the creepy trailer, but what did that dissuade you, or were you in on it?
No, that dissuaded me for a little bit, but I mean, that was like 3 months ago that I saw the trailer. So somehow I either forgot how creepy it was, or I just kind of got over it. And then, yeah, I was excited to see it this week. Like, it's getting harder and harder to actually go to a theater, get time to go to a theater together. So yeah, it was good to go see it.
Last Night in Soho, : date night.
Yeah. I mean, I think I go to the theater more with Nate than I do with you, Lisa. And I don't know how I feel about that, but that's.
Yep.
Seems to be how it's been working lately.
I get to shoulder the disappointment after Mitch watches Halloween Kills. So I'll take a you're welcome on that one. I'm taking the bullet.
It would just be a silent ride home. Just very much like when my fantasy teams are just quiet. Nothing. With that said, we are going to, before we get into our movie of the week, let's have a debate question.
Bid our father, the Sea King, rise from the depths full foul in his fury. Black waves teeming with salt foam to smother this young mouth with pungent slime.
Guys, I need a 5-star review for The Lighthouse so we can get Lisa to watch it.
No. Second of all, I'm giving you until Robert Pattinson's Batman comes out to change that drop.
What do you want? A Robert Pattinson? I am Batman.
Great. That's perfect. Do it.
This is the movie that the podcast wants, but it's not the one it needs.
That's I don't know what too. Voice that is. It's not Report bad. It, I don't know what it is, but it's not bad.
That's what Robert Pattinson sounds like, right? Robert Pattinson with a cold. That's what I'm going.
That's the last time I watched Twilight. Nate, what do you have for our debate question for this week?
Look, Diana Rigg is in this movie. She's one of my favorite actresses of all time. She was in the classic 60s TV show, The Avengers. The good ones, not the Marvel garbage people. The Avengers. Look it up. English from the 60s is amazing. If I were to cast a movie and have an older actor or actress in it, I would have cast her. So Edgar Wright is already like 10 out of 10 starting point for me. But I wanted to see you guys. What's an old actor or actress you would put in a horror movie? Make them do some stuff and hang out. Like what classic actor?
Like not in their prime, as in like at like their current age, roughly, it's assuming like they're now. Still alive.
Older version.
Older version, you know, so, okay.
Because, you know, some people, you know, age, you know, some people age in a way where they're still movie stars. Some people age in a way where you kind of fall off, and some people, you know, go to bit roles. It could be anything, but everyone seems to have like kind of a pet old school actor that they like. And I figured, hey, why not figure that out and put him in a horror movie.
Yeah. So I definitely think Maggie Smith for me. I think she would just do fantastic.
I knew there's a 99% chance it would be a Harry Potter person.
Liked her way before she was McGonagall.
Well, I'm over here. Okay, I mean, look, beyond Clash of the Titans, I honestly don't remember what else she's been in. I know her more today than I do movies from before. Like Clash of the Titans, I think, is the only one I can think of off the top of my head.
Sister Act.
I didn't watch. I mean, I've seen it.
Oh my god.
Oh,
was that shocking?
Oh no! Oh,
you just
no,
broke
Mitch.
My heart.
Wait, is that Back in the Habit or no? That's the second one.
That's the second one.
Mitch, oh my god!
I can't believe you didn't know. I can't believe you didn't know her as Desdemona in Othello.
I'm Lawrence so Olivier. Sorry that we're going to have to stop the podcast right now so Mitch can see Sister Act. Just
And yeah. we're back. All right. I've just watched Sister Act, and now let's talk about Sister Act.
Is she in both?
She's
Wait, is she Mother Superior?
I don't think she's in the second one.
Wait, is she Mother Superior?
Are we sure about this?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because if she's in both, then Mitch has to watch both, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I can't remember if she's in the second one.
And she's in both. So yeah, watch two movies. You have to watch two movies. Look,
what do you want me to tell you? Isn't she like Hera in Clash of the Titans?
Clash of the Titans. Yeah, she's Hera. And then she was in
A Room with a View.
Death on the Nile, which is an Agatha Christie story. Mm-hmm. I remember from that. It was a big ensemble cast. I think there was that Sean Connery in there too.
No, she's not Hera. She's Thetis.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Claire Bloom is Hera.
Okay.
Sure.
One of them. Anyway, you got to watch two Sister Act movies. Okay, Maggie Smith. All right, that's a good one.
Don't you think she?
Is she still nimble? Is she still walking around?
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay, okay.
She just did all of Downton Abbey and the movie. She's fine.
Okay. All right, Maggie Smith. Yeah. So we're staying.
Wait, we're staying.
No. Because you say is she still with it? Maggie Smith had cancer through like three of the seven Harry Potter movies. She just kept filming.
Okay.
While getting treatment. She's like, badass. I'm strong. I can do this. She's got it.
Okay.
Here's the thing. She could play either side. I think she could either play the Jamie Lee Curtis going after the person side. Or she could play the villain too. I think she could handle either one.
Okay, that's crucial. All right, that's important. All right, Mitch, what do you got?
Well, okay, hold on. I want to be clear on the rules. They still need to be alive.
Nah.
I don't think they have to be alive.
Man.
who's your pick?
An actress or actor? I'm so.
It doesn't matter.
I don't know.
It doesn't Whoever matter. It's like, dude, how many who like would classic you want to old see actors a, are in horror you, movies? Not very many.
Okay, throw okay. A good I'm gonna, who I'm, would you want to see in a horror them. Movie? For a guy, I think I'd like to see Steve McQueen.
Okay, okay. Steve McQueen in a horror movie. Okay,
I think he would be he'd be a good over the top like villain.
He did die long. He did die a long time ago.
But he did. Yeah, I know. Jesus Christ.
Okay, but okay, that's why you're asking.
That's
okay.
Why I'm asking. I ask for the rules. Here, you know.
You think Steve McQueen's got the range to be like the evil dude too?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Easy.
He had to be the cool evil dude.
Well, that's what I mean. That'd be the reveal, right? Like you think he's all like helping everyone out, like. You know, you could see him in some like slasher film, right? Where he's like helping out all the kids and everyone goes to him and confides like, oh, I'm so scared. And then it turns out like, wait, why do you have a hook in your closet? Like,
okay.
I totally see the twist.
Now I 100% get
it. Now okay, this one it. You probably will not like, but I'm just thinking just from like the shock of it. What if Shirley Temple showed up? In a horror
I like
film.
This.
That's not who I thought you were going to say.
Like who did you think I was going to
Okay. Now we're really
Betty White.
Oh, no. Betty White's fantastic.
Oh, Betty White would be incredible.
But Betty White, I mean, she'd have to be the villain at that point. You wouldn't see her as a damsel in distress. Like, I could see, you could do Shirley Temple a number of different ways. Like, I think she could fit different
That's
roles.
Really good.
Betty White's great.
She only died 7 years ago. Shirley
I know. Yeah.
Okay. That's why I did not.
Because I think Betty White, or not Betty White. God, y'all got my own Betty White now. I think Shirley Temple like stopped after she was like younger too. Right? Like,
yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I mean, she got made of
age 35.
Could you imagine her coming back and she's like, Black Swan.
She's in Black Swan.
Tap dance.
That's like, her first movie in like.
Well, I'm just saying, what if she's like,
years?
What if she's like the dance instructor, right? But she's like, you know fuck all these younger dancers. I had it all, and then but you know, you could make her the villain. She could be one of the heroes. Yeah, Shirley Temple is certainly an out of left field pick.
That's incredible. I really like that. Wow. Okay.
All right. Well, Nate, what'd you come in here loaded up with?
Well, I mean, I just say Diana Rigg's the best, but
she is fantastic.
She's very good in this. And
I mean, she's the Queen of Thorns.
Everyone knows her from Game of Thrones only. But if everyone gets into the Diana Rigg back catalog because of that, then
I don't even know, to her credit, that they only know her from that. I mean, no, she's a Bond girl, right? But
yeah,
I can't think of anyone else who could play the Queen of Thorns. That's what I mean. Like, that is like, she is it. Like,
she was Olenna.
She had a big gap. There was a gap time where it's like, oh, how many TV movies can Diana Rigg do in one year? Like, oh no, what's happening? You know, she'd be on like Masterpiece Theater or something, or, you know, what, like, right on the British stuff and act well, but like wasn't getting stuff, like a weird in between time. Yeah. And then Game of Thrones came out at the absolute perfect moment. And then she got a bunch of stuff, and then she died last year, which is why.
This was her last movie.
In honor of Diana. Yes, this is the last movie, and I cannot think of a better way to go out. She did a fantastic job. So, Diana Rigg, classic. To be honest, I would really love to stay in the Bond realm. I really love Sean Connery as a straight up villain. He was actually the villain in the Avengers movie. Made in the late 90s with Ralph Fiennes and Uma Thurman, which is nowhere near as good as the show, and was terrible, but it wasn't really a horror movie. I would love to see Sean. Can you imagine a menacing Sean Connery? Could be old and menacing, right? Yeah, like he's got you trapped in a Scottish castle.
I don't.
And all of a sudden it's like, oh no, this guy is lumbering at me. This is not good.
I don't know. I think he's too like, smug and snarky for it, honestly, to be like menacing. I don't know.
What?
Like, I think Sean Connery would do better more as like, he's more of like the Freddy, the Jigsaw, like always has a smart ass comment, always like, you know, I think of him as
you're
the Rock.
You're just letting
right?
Celebrity Jeopardy influence you.
No, think about him in The Rock. I mean,
oh my God.
What was the movie where he was the dragon?
Dragonheart?
Dragonheart.
I am the last one. I am the last one.
Oh, God.
Come on. I saw that in the movie theater. Are you kidding me?
are you going to go Ursula Andress too then? Just get all the Dr.
Ursula
no
Andress would be absolutely incredible. But no, I think Sean Connery could have been. He could be a witty one. That's fine. But yeah, Diana Rigg, I think, just absolutely crushed it. So, all right. Well, yeah. Shirley Temple murdering people could be in your dreams tonight because of Mitch. So thanks for that.
Yeah. Well, tell us which more prestigious leading man or lady you would want to cast. Let us know at TX Pod Massacre on Twitter, Texas Podcast Massacre everywhere. TexasPodcastMassacre@gmail.com. You can leave us a voicemail. Our voicemail has been bereft, mainly because I don't think we have international dialing, and we still have a lot of folks that keep asking about that. I don't know. Google, get on that, man. Okay. I guess we should switch. Maybe Meta
for a phone forwarding service.
Maybe Meta will fix it up. Yeah. You know, you can. Nate, what is our number? Our number, if you do want to leave a voicemail, it's 346-246-3143. Look, sometimes you're just not as prepared as you'd like to be for these things, but we're here. We made it. Leave us a voicemail. Let's chat about it. Are y'all ready to talk about this movie?
Yes. Champing at the bit.
All right. Well, look, as always, it's a new film, so this will be a spoiler-free part and a spoiler-full part. So get your mind right, because we are going to talk about this week's movie of the week, Last Night in Soho.
Last night, I had a dream. There was a girl. I got this kind of gift.
And you are?
Sandy. I can see people, faces.
So I'll see you again.
You know where to find me. But they're not just dreams. They really happened.
What did you see, Sandy?
A girl murdered.
You witnessed the murder last night. You believe this was a vision.
Jack, I don't want to do this.
You think you can just walk away?
Do you believe in ghosts? Save yourself!
Oh, man. So good. Nate, I'm actually, I was upset that we missed the secret screening of this at Fantastic Fest.
Yeah, because I don't know
that I could have sat on not talking about this movie for that long.
Okay, blessing in disguise.
Yeah. Right. So, Lisa, what is Last Night in Soho about?
Last Night in Soho is about a girl who's just trying to live her dream in London of becoming a fashion designer. And she encounters rude people all over the place, strikes out on her own, and then weird shit starts happening.
Yeah, that's fair. Nate.
That's it.
That's it, yeah.
All right.
Locked down. Nate, what can you tell us about this movie?
Yes, this movie, Last Night in Soho, came out last week, right before Halloween. October 28th, I guess I saw it. You guys saw it first night, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Nice. I saw it 2 days later. Thank you for not spoiling any of it.
Very hard. So, yeah. I really wanted to. Really.
Yeah. Just came
really
out.
Wanted to.
This is a 1 hour or 116 minute movie. So just short of 2 hours. Flies by. It's fantastic. 7.6 on IMDb already, although to be fair, all new movies get ranked way too high, way too high. I think Mitch's favorite James Bond, No Time to Die, is like 8.5 or some super high number. This is the latest film from Edgar Wright. You might remember Edgar Wright from also a movie from this year, The Sparks Brothers, the documentary about the Sparks Brothers. He was directed Baby Driver in 2017, the Cornetto trilogy, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, The World's End, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, and the Grindhouse fake trailer for Don't, which is one of my all-time favorite ones. And you see little elements of that in the trailer for this movie, actually, too. Edgar Wright is a huge movie fan. Back behind me in a variety of the special features on Blu-rays, Edgar Wright will just show up and review the trailer for the movie, like a giallo movie. He'll just be on there. They had him on retainer for like trailer reviews, and he definitely used a lot of the giallo type stuff, especially with the glass crack at the end and all that kind of stuff in this trailer, which is just hilarious because clearly he likes that kind of stuff. And he is directing the remake, redoneness of previous episode, The Running Man. That's right. The Running Man's coming back with Edgar Wright. Mitch, are you excited? Okay. Well,
is it going to be a movie or a TV show?
It's a movie, I believe.
Have they cast who the lead is?
No, I did not see that.
So I am. Edgar, like, I like a lot of Edgar Wright stuff, so I am willing to have an open mind, but...
Oh, wow, you're saying it's unbeatable.
Like, The Running Man is a personal favorite. I don't remember what I actually gave it. If I didn't give it a 10 out of 10 on our podcast, I don't know why, when we did the episode with Mike Wright from Fantasy Footballers. Yeah, that's a personal favorite, classic. That's what you would call a foundational film for someone, right? Like when you think about like here, like when you're trying to get a sense of people's taste and you're like, what are like the cornerstone movies or things that you like that really make up a lot of your personality? Running Man is right there for me. I mean, I think that's fair. You both can, I think, attest to that. I mean, a great Arnold Schwarzenegger.
It's for me too.
Yeah, exactly. It's a fantastic film.
I grew up watching Running Man.
That's hilarious.
I'm
Citizen Kane. To Kill a Mockingbird.
Look, here, if they don't have the line, here is Sub-Zero, now Plane Zero, it's a failure. It's really going to depend on who they pick to be Arnold. Because I don't know. It's one of those movies that, like, it's so well cast and how terrible it is. I don't know. We'll have to see. I'm willing to keep it in my mind. I do like Edgar Wright. So I'd be more furious if it was a James Wan. Or really almost anyone, practically anyone else. Anyway, sorry. We went on a whole different tangent.
Yeah, okay.
It's like that meme where it's like the daughter's like yelling or like, you know, getting real passionate. And the mom's like under the blanket, like, just like wide eyed, like what the hell? That's what Nate was just like right now with me, just like going off.
So the lead actress of the movie is Thomasin McKenzie. She is in previous episode of this year, Old. She was in Mitch's favorite starting movie of 2019's Fantastic Fest, Jojo Rabbit. She's in the classic.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thomas.
It has been bugging the crap out of me.
Yep, she
okay,
was
sorry,
in,
move on.
No, she was in classic independent film about living off the grid, Leave No Trace. She is gonna be Carrie Strug in the movie called Perfect in the future. So there's
interesting
something to do. She's all over the place. Anya Taylor-Joy is the second actress in this. You might remember her from Queen's Gambit last year is probably her most famous role other than 2015's The Witch, which is one of the greatest movies of all time. Her face is right here on my bookshelf if you're looking at the YouTube. She has been in a few other movies, but I'm mainly interested in the movies that are coming out in the future. Next year in April, she will be in Robert Eggers' The Northman. That's right. Exciting on that. She's going to be in a horror comedy called The Menu next year.
Oh, yeah. That looks
She is going to be Furiosa in the Furiosa prequel in the Mad Max universe. Oh. So she's going to be Furiosa. And probably one of the biggest horror movie things that I think I've seen in a while, she's going to be Princess Peach in the Mario movie featuring Chris Pratt. So...
Yeah, I mean that they were doing good until that one. That's a new like extra level of my house movie.
So
I mean,
there's that.
You know,
also I remember her from the Glass Split, M. Night Shyamalan movies as well. So
yeah, she has a smaller role in Peaky Blinders,
I knew you're gonna. I left that off on purpose. I knew you're gonna.
Look, Lisa and I love Peaky Blinders. Not ashamed to admit that
she's great in it too.
Yeah. What I at least appreciate about Anya Taylor-Joy is that, you know, she got her start really with horror, and you know a lot of folks they do that to get in and then they never like go back to it. But she seems to really kind of embrace those types of roles. So I'm excited to kind of see her as some of the one like the Northman. Furiosa. Yeah. I'm excited
Rumored to be in the future Robert Eggers version of Nosferatu as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that could be awesome.
I mean, do you just already have a place like on your wall marked for that? Like this is just reserved for it. Like as soon as
Robert
there,
Eggers section. Yeah, I don't know. All right. Matt Smith is in this. He's Doctor Who for a bit. He's gonna be Daemon Targaryen in the House of the Dragon series next year, which I know you guys are very jacked for.
Yes.
He is going to be in, unfortunately, I saw this trailer when I watched last night in Soho, Morbius. He's going to be in Morbius.
Oh, Nate, so, I just realized when we went, we didn't
as a character named Loxias Crown, whatever that means.
Yeah, we actually didn't get any trailers when we went to see. It started straight into the movie.
Oh, interesting.
On opening night.
Yeah.
And I cannot say this enough. Last year, my favorite horror movie, check it out on Netflix, His House, Matt Smith. Is in that movie for a bit. And last but not least, Dinah Rigg was in the 1973 classic as Vincent Price's daughter, Theater of Blood. So check out that classic horror film with Dinah Rigg in it.
Now, Nate, were you familiar with Matt Smith prior to this movie? A good bit.
Yeah, he was in His House.
Was that the only thing you'd seen him in, though?
I think I vaguely knew he was Doctor Who, and I think I saw him in the terrible Terminator. Which one? Like the
Genesis?
Yes, that one. I had seen him. Not a whole lot.
Yeah, so I'm a little more familiar.
Oh, he's in The Crown. I saw him in The Crown.
Yeah, I'm a little more familiar with him from Doctor Who. I think, Lisa, you're probably more familiar with him with The Crown, huh?
Yeah, he did a great job in that.
I'm curious. I mean, yeah, Crown, Doctor Who. What do you think his better role is?
I'm getting the sense, and we're gonna. I think this new Game of Thrones show is gonna really be the deciding factor. He really can just kind of get into a role to where I don't see him. I see the person he's playing. So he's done a good job of that so far. Mm-hmm. So I say he was great in Doctor Who. He was great in The Crown because I didn't really see Matt Smith. It was just, you know, sure. Who he was. So
I was a little worried about, I like Matt Smith a lot. I haven't watched The Crown. So when they cast him as Daemon Targaryen, it's like, I get it because he's a big name.
Yeah.
But I wasn't sure because, again, I know him more in Doctor Who, and that's more of a different kind of, but I think my guess is that his role in The Crown is probably what ended up getting him the Targaryen role.
He's very good as Prince Philip.
Okay. So yeah, that'll probably work out well.
All I know is that this dude has got a forehead that looks like concrete. It's like one of the most solid foreheads. This side, like him and Peyton Manning.
I was about to say it's very Manning-esque. Damn it! Took it right out of my mouth.
It's like when those Rams hit each other as hard as possible, and like they make like the thunk sound. That's what I imagine when I watch this movie.
Stole it right out of my mouth. Very, very upset. I should have just kept going. Got it out before you did. Damn it!
All right. Let's get into it. Non-spoiler. Let's get into the non-spoiler section here.
No spoilers.
I'm going to start off.
You better hurry up because there's a lot to spoil on this.
This movie is fantastic. I really liked it. I could see how some people could say like it's a little more stylishy than substancey. I can see that. Maybe critique. I don't care. It was really, I liked it a lot.
Nate says, shut your face. It's fine.
I liked it, dude. If you know anything about me, it's I like the entire aesthetic of the 60s, and I don't care about anything else. Like, you go back in the 60s, it's like, oh, good. And then the movie is like almost like a reverse nostalgia movie, too, where this is like, hey, remember when everyone said that time was good? Not really. I love that, too. It's perfect. It's like a total, it's a total like counterbalance. Like, oh, the 60s is glamour and glitz that everyone likes. Check. Also, there's a lot of shadiness. Like, I love both sides of the coin at the same time. So I thought it was great. And the acting, I would say, was very solid by everybody. I think maybe the end got a little, fell off a little bit from maybe the first two thirds of the movie, I would say. But it kind of lost a little bit of steam. But other than that, I think it was.
You can't see my face right now. I'm okay. We got a little differing opinions then.
All right, I like it. What'd you think, Lisa?
Oh, it was really, really good.
Yes.
I really, first of all, I grew up listening to 60s music just because of my mom. So I was. afraid I was going to get kicked out of the theater because I just kept singing the songs as they came up. So I love the soundtrack. It was awesome. I love the aesthetic.
This isn't Beauty and the Beast, Lisa. All right, come on.
Leave me alone, Nate. It was, I really, you know, we'll talk about it some more, but some of the stylistic choices they did when they're first cutting back and forth from the 60s to the present was really, really well done. The cinematography, I don't know how they got some of these shots, but they did it and they were done very well. All of the casting was spot on. I don't think there was a single character that I was like, I don't really like that person. So overall, just great, 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 great. The ending was fantastic. I mean, this is probably the best one that I've seen in some time.
Ooh, all right.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it. All right, Mitch, what do you got?
Well,
Oh no!
No, I want to be controversial, but I mean it's a very solid film. A lot of the visual effects, you know, the use of the mirrors, everything you see in the trailer. Just, I mean, it's a gorgeous film. The lights are all there. I everything with the lighting, the colors, all the technical aspects of it, incredible. The story itself is good. I don't know. We'll get into it with spoilers and all that. I don't know that's anything overly earth-shattering, but I think it's one of the things I kind of talk about in other episodes, right? I'm okay if you can sort of see where things are going or guess. I didn't guess it immediately. I think Lisa actually figured it out much earlier than I did. But I care about how you execute it. You know, you could have an ending that you could see a mile away, but as long as you're executing well, then that's to me, that's more important. This movie does that in spades. A question for you, Nate. Now, Thomas and McKenzie dropped out of Top Gun Maverick to be in this film. Yeah. Do you think she made the right choice? What a
good move.
Do you think she made the right call?
Yeah,
smartest move of 2021.
She's like 20 years old making just savvy moves.
She was already probably going to be Tom Cruise's love interest.
This one, she's like getting hit on by like some of the creepiest like 75-year-olds you've ever seen. So
it would have been the same thing as being a Top Gun Maverick with Tom Cruise. Great. That works out fine. I enjoyed it. Is it the best movie I've seen in some time? I don't know if I have as high a praise as maybe y'all two do, but I would not think this is going to be a controversial pick when we get to.
I'll just say this. This is going in the Naterian collection, just straight up. Where's the pre-order button? Where's that at? It's happening.
Fair enough. Now, for folks, so Lisa, I think for our unsuspecting victims out there who see this and are concerned about it being spooky, like you, for instance, when you saw the trailer and it spooked you out for a bit. I mean, anything you would want, anything you'd warn unsuspecting victims about?
Yeah, overall, it's fine. I think there's some kind of very creepy imagery. I'm trying to think how to say it without giving away too much, since we're not in the spoiler version. There's ghosts, and I'm air quoting ghosts, that there are some imagery in it that is genuinely creepy, and I think that's what I saw in the trailer. So maybe it's in the trailer a little bit. But in terms of like gore and jump scares, there's not so much. I think most people will be okay. I do think the creatures or whatever we're calling them were a little bit creepy. So that would be the only thing I would say. Yeah. But I would also say the story itself is so good and so well done. This is maybe one of the few times I've ever said, just suck it up. Just go.
Suck it up.
I was like, there's probably going to be some creepy stuff in here, but I really want to see the story. So I'll go see it. So
yeah.
Yeah.
That's high praise. All right. Well, excellent.
Suck it up. All right.
Nate, I think, is there, again, not spoilers, and we'll get to spoilers very briefly, but
yeah,
you know, I guess we both had high expectations for this film coming in. I think that's fair to say, right? You and I were pretty amped about this one and excited for it. Did it hit the expectation? Did it surpass it? What can you say about that?
Did it surpass expectations?
Yeah.
I mean, my expectations were sky high. Mm-hmm. Sky high for this movie. So. As soon as I saw anything about this, like, well, this is my movie. This is the most anticipated movie of the year. Has been since I found out about it. So I would say it met expectations because the expectations were extremely high. Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah, I probably fall in line with that. I don't know that it blew me away, but again, I also had such high expectations. So the fact that I left happy is I think a reason that if you're looking for a movie to see in theaters, you know, this is absolutely, I think one to go check out. Granted, I don't think it's actually on anywhere else, right? I think this is only in theaters.
Yep.
So definitely go check it out. Don't wait on this one. It's very worth it.
And that being said, this movie is, you know, a solid R. There's some slashing. There's some slashingness. If you don't like weird faces, you're in trouble in this movie because that's
the good way to put it. It's the weird faces.
There's like weird faces a lot.
Blurred out eyes and stuff bother you. Yeah.
I don't know if you guys remember, we had a debate question a while ago where I said like just off faces I don't like. Like the faces in Truth or Dare. Remember that, Mitch?
Yes.
Where the face would get weird.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, that. Can't. This
so
was
you weren't
different
a fan
enough.
Of these. Huh?
No. This was different enough and abstracted enough where it was still creepy, obviously, but it didn't trigger my uncanny weird face valley.
Well,
that direction. So
I would say, remember the zombie guy from Hocus Pocus? What was his name? Billy? It's like Billy's face, but blurred.
I don't know if you remember the White Christmas episode, John Hamm, Black Mirror, when he loses his ability to see everybody.
Yes.
It's
like kind of
like
that
at the end, if you remember that specific reference.
If you know exactly what we're talking about, that's probably the creepiest part of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's okay.
There's some slashing, but it's standard.
Yeah,
it's standard
there
fare.
Is, but it's not... Yeah. It's not egregious.
I need to stop doing this. You mentioned Truth or Dare. Now I'm just looking at the pictures of faces.
Let's not bring up Truth or Dare.
Yeah, that's. I mean, she didn't even look like Lucy Hale in that one. Anyway, yes, not quite that creepy because that Truth or Dare that is legitimately the creepiest. It was some of the creepiest imagery for sure. This is up there. All right, look, I don't think we have anything else to talk about. Besides spoilers. So if you haven't seen the movie, I don't know what you're waiting on. Get your ass out there. Go see the movie. Otherwise,
get out of here, witch!
It's time to talk spoilers. Okay, so.
Let's spoil it. This movie's real good. Real good.
I'm trying to even think of where to start. I mean, I was surprised that they went. What I thought was smart, but I was surprised they did it, was that it right away was like, oh, yeah, she can see ghosts. Just accept that that is a true thing and don't worry about the science or any of it behind it.
Yeah,
I thought that was fine. I mean,
she's sensitive.
Yeah. It's her mom that she can see. So, I mean, it's not too outlandish, right? And then I guess they're trying to hint, like, her grandmother, whatever, was like, look, you know, you've had mental health issues before. Your mother obviously had them. So please don't hesitate to reach out for help. So they kind of, from the very beginning, blurred that line with, is this in her head? Is it something that's actually happening to her? So I thought they set it up well from the get-go.
Yeah. And I think what helped this movie is that they didn't try to explain it. Because I think they could have gotten themselves trapped in a whole bunch of weird nonsense. Because is it that she can see just dead people? Is it that she sees the past? Is it that she's like a clairvoyant? What is it, right? Because it doesn't really, her visions aren't, they're obviously not just dead people that she's seeing, right? She's seeing the past, but she also does see dead people. So it's, I think had they tried to explain it, that could have negatively impacted the film. So I actually thought it was smart for them to just kind of put it out there and just be like, just accept that she sees shit and let's just move on with it. Cool. We good?
Yeah. I think whatever it is, I think it's a metaphor for just like the stuff you keep with you. When she gets in a weirder and weirder spot, it becomes more and more like it impact her mental state when all this shit's happening is impacted by how bad it's getting in her real life. So then it's impacting the what she's seeing, and then that's impacting her life. And it's like a downward spiral. Whereas in other parts of the movie, when she is not as stressed and not as whatever, it's there, but in a really small way, right? So, the spiraling in the movie is definitely palpable as things are happening. I mean, it's just one of those where it's just like, this keeps getting bad. This just keeps getting bad in so many ways, but it's not a classic movie in that, you have the whole going back in time and all that kind of stuff, which is kind of cool. I don't know. I mean, I guess the movie you could compare this to that we most recently saw is like Malignant, right? Where
a little bit.
I would say the setup for this movie is just vastly superior to Malignant. Less what the fuck than Malignant, maybe. But I think a much, more solid, I think, setup and payoff. But
there's no backwards fighting in this one, though, Nate.
There's no back. Well, she's fighting backwards through time. I don't know. That's a good question. I just don't know how you could fall asleep with those red, white, blue lights on all the time.
Oh my gosh.
Can someone invest in some curtains? It's like that black Seinfeld episode curtains, where they have like on. that chicken place, and he gets like a tan from like,
yes, Seinfeld. Yes.
It's exactly like Kenny Roasters.
Kenny Roasters.
Can we just get a curtain in this place? I don't know. London sounds like
in Alaska
to get a room. So I guess maybe
in Alaska in the summer, the sun never sets and somehow they're able to sleep. Curtains. Well,
if you saw the documentary Insomnia with Al Pacino, they definitely have the blackout curtains.
No, but I went to Alaska during the summer.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You just close those curtains and go to bed and you get up. Oh, the sun is still there. Great.
Go for a night jog. It is totally light out. All right, cool.
Yeah. I went to a movie by myself, got out at midnight, called my mom, and I was like, don't worry, it's like 2 o'clock over here. It's fine. Sun still hasn't gone down.
So you're saying they should have done Last Night in Juno.
Yes.
That's the movie that you wanted to see. All right. Well, maybe there's a sequel. She goes to the Alaska art school. After London gets kicked out for having problems and has to work her way back up in Alaska. That would be incredible.
I don't even know where we were.
What about you, Mitch? What are some of your favorite parts of the movie? How about that?
Man, I don't know. I mean, I want to get in. There's some scenes I want to get into. I do want to ask real quick. Sorry to pivot on your question. Particular scene, but I don't want to get there yet. Lisa, let's talk about this group of friends. So we've all been to college. Y'all had the move into the dorm roommates. I mean, did this mirror y'all's experience?
I never lived in a dorm. So
okay, so neither one of y'all lived in a dorm. How did y'all escape this?
It's called being awesome.
I don't know. I feel like they made me. I feel like they made me live in this condemned ass dorm. This is at least a nice dorm. But yeah, no, this felt right.
It's called living at home and saving your money.
Yeah. This.
Oh,
this,
okay. Well, I did it better than I lived somewhere else off campus.
This felt right. I lived in dorms for a little bit. For about maybe the first year or so in college. First quarter or so, because we did quarters. We didn't do semesters. Yeah, the first quarter.
I know.
It sounds like it's a fake. Weird. It's like the University of Phoenix. I didn't know that Mitch went to the University of Phoenix.
This. Look, it's accredited. That's all you need to know, Nate. The point is,
it's e-credited. That's different.
Shut your mouth. No, but anyway. I remember having a roommate who just was the absolute worst. Very much like took control of most of the space. Was like, yeah, this is my area. I'm going to be in the bottom bunk. You can be on the top, because we had like a loft thing. And it's like, great. And so he would just like have the TV on. He is in like an easy ass major. And we just had the TV on like all hours of the night. Real just shit person. eventually I got out of there and got to a private dorm. And I pretty much did what she did in this movie was, hey, I'm going to go find a new space to be.
Who was the curmudgeon-y, but like, you know, gentle old lady that you were renting your room from?
Well, I went to a private dorm first.
Okay.
So I don't know. There was a curmudgeon-y.
You were in Louisiana. I'm imagining this like the equivalent of this lady being exactly Kathy Bates.
It would have been.
Is that possible?
Potentially a combination of the Kathy Bates from The Waterboy and Farmer Fran from The Waterboy. Waterboy was actually a lot closer experience to my college career than I care to admit. a lot of double talk where I went to school for, but. This turned out nowhere because how did y'all not have roommates or live in the dorm?
I had roommates. It's just, I already knew them. So we got an apartment instead of being in the dorms.
How did you, but, I thought everyone had to like, if I could just skip the dorm, I would have.
I had roommates. Great.
They were called my family.
Well, not all of us have a prestigious university in our backyard,
yikes.
Lisa.
Yikes! Did you walk uphill both ways to come down from your own bedroom every day?
Slept in my own bed, ate my mom's cooking. It was fantastic.
It's like you didn't even go to college.
I imagine the sneaking the people in was very similar to this movie then.
Yes. There was no sneaking anyone in.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
That didn't happen.
Downside.
So.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, Lisa, I saw you getting visibly angry at this group of girls.
There's some mean British girls.
You know what? Mind your business. Just mind your business. Just stay out of it. Mind your business. It drives me crazy.
It's the
cut. And I know why they did it. Like they had to have these antagonistic girls or whatever, but it was just like, oh my God.
Lisa doesn't know. She was pampered at home, you know, everything, getting home cooked meals all the time.
Lisa
didn't know what it was like.
Lisa wasn't involved in the cutthroat life of the fashion school of arts or whatever the hell.
I have to assume that
the entrance essay into this university is about Devil Wears Prada, and it's got to be just nothing but like quotes and, you know, how Meryl Streep are you, right? Like,
can we just backtrack for a second here and say that dress she's wearing in the opening that's like made of newspaper that she made herself was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was like Amy Poehler's dress in Parks and Rec. I mean,
the best dress she had designed the whole movie.
Yeah. But those newspapers from the fall catalog. So it would be very 2000
current,
and late.
Current
Lisa.
Newspapers. Yeah,
very 2000 yeah. and late. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, these girls are the worst. I laugh very hard at the fridge with like everything had her name on it, practically. Y'all that didn't have this, I'm blown away. I don't know why I cannot let that go. All right, well, let's move on. I mean, y'all's favorite scene. So, I mean, look, we can talk about it now, or we can if there's one before this. But I mean, the library scene is quite possibly the best scene in this whole film.
Yeah,
good. Everything was good.
I want to talk about it. I also just want to talk about the very first time she crosses over into the 60s.
Okay, yeah,
because
incredible. Oh, because the sound changed in the theater.
The sound changes. She's following Anna Taylor-Joy. They do, I think Mitch alluded to it and probably Nate too, they do some amazing camera work with the mirrors and the reflections. Mm-hmm. I think, so she goes in, she meets, well, Anna Taylor-Joy meets Matt Smith and he kind of pulls her into this whirlwind. The scene with them on the dance floor and they're shifting back and forth between the two girls.
Yeah.
It was flawless. It was just so well done having one go out of the scene and the next come in. And I'm still wondering if they did that, if that's editing or if that wasn't, I'm assuming it was just in one take and they would just have the other one stand off screen and then come in.
To mimic exactly. Right. Or else it wouldn't, the cuts wouldn't work.
Exactly. Yeah. So they must've practiced that a lot. And then that running out of the building and having her, you know, reflection as they're going up the stairs. So that whole thing just kind of drew you into that 60s world, drew you into Anna Taylor-Joy's life. And it was really well done.
Yeah, I agree.
Speechless.
Well, no, it's crazy.
I get it.
So the first 20, 30 minutes of the movie, right? The sound is in like the center channel on the right and the left. And then once when she gets into the 60s, you know, dream land, when she's sleeping, then you get the surround sound that hit. And it was just so cool. That's one of the reasons why you definitely want to go into a theater and watch it. Cause that was just, I don't know if I've ever been in a movie that's done that before. It was very, very cool. this whole movie was just real cool.
Nate's nerding out over here.
It's just real cool. I can't get over. I just can't get over like the whole 60s look and everything. Everybody's hair and outfit. I mean, it's like, dang it. This is just perfect for me. It was awesome. Very good. Yeah. Very well done. The period stuff was all seemed like it was pretty much perfect. And then you get into the really seedy shadiness. Anya Taylor-Joy's character comes in. It's kind of like a classic Hollywood kind of story that you'd seen a lot. I was like, yeah, I'm like this bright-eyed, bushy-tailed person coming in from somewhere else. And then the industry spits you, you know, like chews you up and spits you out kind of a deal. That's kind of a standard type story, but this one's a little more murdery. So, definitely, for that.
This one was rough.
She's getting pimped out to everyone.
Skipped right to that. Okay.
Well, all right. What are you talking about? You're skipping to the murdery.
You're
part.
Skipping the murder.
Well, I'm just saying it gets more murdery. I said it gets more murdery. I didn't give any details yet, but
Well, anyway, we're there.
Yeah, Matt Smith.
Yeah, so she starts to realize as she's going back and forth through these nightmares, I'll almost call them, and what they turn into, that not everything is as it seems, not everything's so great for Anna Taylor-Joy. She never does get the singing career that she desired. Instead, she gets pimped out by Matt Smith and things just kind of horrible. And it's one of those, I think, you know, the whole time when she goes back and she's fighting really hard and she thinks she's gotten Anna Taylor-Joy to break free and she's like, great, I saved her. And then she sees her on the bed just lying there while one of the guys comes into the room and she's like, oh crap, like I can't save her. Like I want desperately to save her and I can't because all this happened to her. Yeah. So it just kind of just starts that descent into madness, and that's when all this bleeds into her real life and into her relationships. And
yeah
it's crazy.
It's very subtly
done and very well done, because it's not like a snap, it's just kind of like she's starting to lose it and eventually pretty much does lose it, you know, when she finally brings the only nice guy in the whole movie back home with her. And she thinks that she sees Anna Taylor-Joy getting murdered.
Yeah.
And so she like totally loses it. And that poor guy who's just been the sweetest, nicest guy is like, oh gosh, I got to get out of here.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Diana Riggs, like I'm going to shoot you if you don't, you know?
Yeah.
She says you're going to call the cops. This is.
Oh, she says bit, later, right? She's like, I'm going to shoot him. Yeah.
I almost killed him. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that Halloween party scene is nuts. And that leads us to, I think, what I wanted to get to, what I thought was maybe the best, I mean, scene or sequence in the movie, which is the library. So, you know, she's seeing all the faceless men that have, you know, basically she's been pimped out to for however long this has gone on for. Right. And they're literally just stalking her and like a true, like, ghost zombie ass, like, I mean,
oh yeah,
a truly
like grabbing, yeah,
like truly grabbing. A really like creepy, scary kind of scene, and you know it's so well done. You know, she's researching, she's looking through all these old newspapers, she's trying to figure out what her name is, or you know, her, like, get a last name so she can like identify for the cops, because she's telling them, hey, I witnessed a murder, and they attack her in the library, and then that scene, I don't know about y'all. The minute she grabs like the knife or the scissors, whatever, she's like, I'm about to take one of these things out. I'm like, oh no, the boy's going to get it. Oh no.
I thought so too. Like, I was so like, worried for him.
No, she just almost stabs the roommate that sucks.
Rachel McAdams.
Yeah. Which no one would have been upset about.
And so that whole sequence was basically Repulsion, right? The arms grabbing in Repulsion, the arms grab out of the, you know, the apartment walls, right?
Yeah.
And then she stabs the person who's trying to date her, so which would have been the same if it would have been if she would have stabbed John with a knife. So it's a little different, but it seems very similar. This whole the whole descent to madness part is very Roman Polanski-esque, right? Repulsion and Rosemary's Baby, which those are both very well done, you know, documented ways into going crazier and having it spill into your personal life. That part was great. Who do we think acted better? Thomasin McKenzie or Anya Taylor-Joy? Who do you think acted better?
Oh, I can't pick.
You gotta pick. Gotta pick one.
No, I really
two
don't.
Two leads in the movie, right? I mean,
they both did fantastic. They both did such a great job.
Can't pick.
No. I think this was so well cast. Not just the two of them, but everyone. Yeah, I can't. They were both really good.
The problem is it's two very different styles, right? Like, Thomasin McKenzie is so just natural. Like it's almost like she's not acting, which is maybe I think for that reason, if you had to make me pick, which it sounds like you are, I would pick Thomasin.
Yes.
I would pick Thomasin. Right. I mean, Anya Taylor-Joy does an incredible job. Yeah. She's absolutely playing the character, you know, she's doing well, but yeah, I mean, I thought Thomasin, yeah, they were perfectly matched. I don't think either one of them stole the limelight from the other. Like, they were, like, you know, they both were doing so well. I think there was a worry that, like, you know, when you, especially when you have them both on the screen, like, who are you always going to be focused on, right?
Yeah.
I never really was paying attention to both of them. I think that's the credit, just how well they were doing, you know, how engaging both characters were.
Okay. Yeah.
And what do you think, Nate? Who are you going to go with?
I mean, this, it would hurt me to say, but I'd probably go with Thomasin McKenzie also. painful, but I think that she had more range, right, of things to do in the film.
Yeah.
But she's real good. Like, she's a really good actress.
Yeah.
So I get it. That said, Anya Taylor-Joy is just incredible. The 60s-ness that she, look, that and Queen's Gambit, I mean, man, she's just destroying the 60s from both angles here.
Well, even Thomasin was good and old, right? I mean, she's one of the bright spots of that movie, you know. It was,
well, Jojo Rabbit, she's incredible also.
That, I mean, too. I mean, yeah, it's the, very they're good. They're perfectly suited to play across one another, right? Like, neither one of them is
Anya Taylor-Joy is the more like kind of flamboyant thing. She's more of a calm thing, and then she becomes more chaotic and more whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was real good. I don't know. The actor who played John, that guy was solid, the love interest.
He was really good too.
That guy was just like a nice grounding, you know, kind of dude. Matt Smith got very ominous very quick. Speaking of ominous, Terrence Stamp as Silver-Haired Gentleman. Oh, probably one of the creepiest dudes in the history of Earth, acting.
He was fantastic. If you haven't seen him in The Haunted Mansion, he's really good in The Haunted Mansion too.
I have not seen him in The Haunted Mansion.
Mitchell,
stop laughing at me.
I don't know. What's The Haunted Mansion? I don't know what it is.
It's a Disney movie, but it's basically, there's a ride called The Haunted Mansion. They made a movie. I mean, it's been, God, I don't even know when it came out. It's with
Eddie Murphy.
But Terrence Stamp is crossing it off his mental list there. It's so good. And Terrence Stamp plays the caretaker of the house, and he's just, it's a really good movie. Unsuspecting victim friendly. If you're looking for something more, if you're looking for something more geared, because we don't do these a lot, more geared towards you want a spooky movie for your kids. It has its little scares, but it's not like bad or anything. This is definitely a good Halloween-y movie to watch with the kids.
That's fair. Nate already has little Danny watching. I assume it this year as well as
not quite
Cujo.
Not quite.
All right, so let's get into sort of the ending here because we're running short on time here. I'm curious, when did y'all figure out the twist?
Do you want to go first, Nate? You want me to go first?
I figured it out almost instantaneously.
Me too.
I figured out the twist when she, after like during the first night she was there, like, okay, well, this is clearly because she's sensitive, right? Like, she's sensitive to things. So when she's there, it's because something around that, right, has happened or is happening. And so I don't know. It didn't take that long for me to figure it out. However, I thought the execution, like you said, Mitch, I thought was so good. It didn't really bother me that I kind of figured it out earlier.
For me, it's when she's basically telling her, I used to work in this house. There's a lot of memories here. I can't sell the house. Ooh, why can't you sell the house? Okay. And that phone is for emergency use only. I was like,
that's sketchy.
A lot of really specific stuff. No men, no male visitors after 8 p.m. Don't bring those men in my house.
Well, she's got to be careful about the smell and the smell in the summer.
Got to be careful about the smell. The smells rise.
So
she purposely, there's an Italian restaurant. All you're going to smell is garlic. How convenient. So. Yeah.
So I truthfully did not get it as quickly as you both purportedly did. Lisa
purportedly.
I know Lisa got it early because she wrote it on her phone when the movie started. Nate, I just assume you're lying. But you're not gonna cast Diana Rigg to just like show up for 5 minutes to be the landlady.
Exactly.
Issue with Diana Rigg getting casted in this movie. It's like you're not gonna have the Queen of Thorns just not do shit. Now, here's the thing. I did not know. So here's what I thought happened, and I didn't figure out what really was going on until the library, when she started seeing some of the headlines and it was like, wealthy dude goes missing, father of two missing, right? Like all that. Then I was like, okay, now I know what's going on. Before that, like, I knew Terrence Stamp wasn't the dude. There's no way they were going to have it that obvious in the trailer. Right. I knew he wasn't Matt Smith. I just didn't think that Diana Rigg was also Sandy. That's, I think, the twist that I did not cut. I thought maybe she was involved somehow. Maybe she was like, I didn't know if she was like partners with Matt Smith's character or if she was something else. Right. I wasn't convinced Sandy was still alive. That was the part I didn't catch. I knew Diana Rigg had something to do with it, but I didn't connect them until the library.
Got it. Yeah.
But yeah,
the library scene just brings so many elements together in the film, right? It was kind of the whole crux of the movie. It was very, very.
But let's talk about it's a good twist. Yeah, I think a lot of people, particularly if you've watched enough mystery movies and stuff, I don't think it's going to be over. You'll figure it out early-ish. But I think one of the things I really love those movies, I love this whole, like, all the ghosts come back and they're saying, save us, because they're trapped in this house, right? And that she, like, rebukes them. It's just, no, fuck y'all. I'm not here to help. I'm not here to help you terrible people. That's pretty great, right? Because so often in these movies, you know, they'll side with, like, oh, no, let's side with not the killer, right? This time it's like, no, you fuckers deserved it. So.
The whole story is great. I mean, it was about, you know, in the beginning with the cab driver and everything. It was just like, there's been leering dudes for a long time. Like, leering creepy dudes have been around for a while. Like, we're going to, you know, like, this movie's going to be about that. And there's creepy dudes just everywhere. The guy who's good, the cop guy, is leery. And then he's also leery, like, 5 decades later. There's like creepy dudes at parties. There's all kind of, like, it's just like the John dude is like, he's amazing. That's it. He's the only one in the movie who's anywhere near decent. The movie's definitely about that. I think it nails it. I mean, at the end, you're just like, yeah, Diana Rigg murdered all these dudes, but they murdered her soul.
Let's talk about that, because
payback.
You know, we totally said the ending, which is fine. But this scene where she tells, you know, John, hey, I'm going to run in, going to tell my landlady I'm leaving. We're getting the hell out. If I'm not back in 15 minutes, famous last words. Yeah. Coming after me, right?
That's why I gotta have that support structure, like the cop said, right? Like, that was the crucial, when she asked for help and got exactly. it, that got her out of her ghost murder, whatever, slash, yes. you know, real life mental trouble.
She finally asked for help. Yeah. She sits down, she's having a cup of tea with Diana, the landlady who's been so nice to her, taking her in. She feels so bad for almost getting her in trouble with the cops. She sorts through the mail to find her mail. Boom. She's like, oh, shit. This is Sandy. And the slow burn of that scene and Diana Rigg just turning from sweet landlady to, yeah, I murdered a ton of people and they're in this house, is just so well done. She's just like Mitch said, you're not going to stick her in this movie to give her nothing, right? This scene was her scene. This was it. This was Diana Rigg's, like, whole reason for being in the movie, right? So I just thought that was really well done. The whole kind of very slow, methodical chase up the stairs where they're kind of cutting back and forth between Diana Rigg and Anna Taylor-Joy was really well shot too. Until you get to that pivotal scene at the top of the stairs where, yeah, these ghosts are calling out to her. This whole time she thinks, and I think this is how I kind of explained it to myself. I think they kind of put these scenes in her head to make her realize what was happening so she could save them. You know, not the other way around, because Sandy wouldn't have wanted her to know. I think it was all of these men that got murdered that were like, we're going to get this girl to realize we're stuck here and she's going to help us. She's going to be our saving grace, you know, not realizing she was like, no, fuck you guys. So the fact that the whole movie, they're coming after her, not to harm her, but to say, help us. I didn't see that coming. That was a really interesting little secondary twist to it. But in the end, you know, the house burns down. Sandy says, I'm not going to jail for this because all I did was protect myself. So I'm going to burn with my house. And a silver lining for her, none of these men will ever be found. They still won't know what happened to them. So she gets to take that with her, you know. So I thought all of it was really well done. You can see I really hated this movie.
Yeah, it's a solid movie, right?
Yeah,
Yeah, I mean, we do get our happy ending. She does get out of the house, and you know, now that she solved that mystery, hey, she's on to doing her whole fashion career, bringing back the 60s fashion. So
yeah,
and thank goodness that whatever poison Diana Rigg put in the tea didn't actually kill her immediately. Somehow
she's not a poisoner; she's a stabber. She doesn't know. She's a stabber.
I guess she doesn't know, right? The percentages or whatever.
She just threw it out.
Mitch, right after we saw the movie, told me something that I kind of didn't pick up on, but was really well done too. He said he was so glad that John wasn't like the knight in shining armor coming to save the day. Like,
no, he got stabbed.
He just immediately gets stabbed and lays there. All right, it's up to you. Good luck.
Yeah, he just shows up and just gets stabbed immediately. He is absolutely useless, and that's okay. It's okay that he's not like, come here, save the day type of thing. Right?
No, Mitch, he's hollering in The Shining.
Yeah.
He's like, this whole time he's trying to help. He's like, things are happening. He's like, I'm going to help. He runs in, just gets stabbed instantaneously.
Yeah.
That's exactly how
you mean
how
like,
it
he's
was.
Like,
yeah.
You mean he's like groundskeeper Willie in The Shining?
Yes. I don't want to get sued. Yeah. No, one last thing I talk about. I got to talk about the soundtrack. So,
We got
a who's who of people, including The Who. We got The Who. We got The Kinks. We got The Searchers. We got the John Barry Orchestra, did the James Bond theme. We got Dusty Springfield. Basically everybody, but people who know the Grindhouse film, Death Proof, will remember Davey D. Dozy, Beaky, Mitch, and Titch, which was a lot of the dialogue in one certain scene. They sang the song Last Night in Soho, of which the movie is based. So you have a Death Proof, Last Night in Soho crossover band to listen to. So,
yay.
You got that. Lisa, do you have a particular favorite song? You said you were singing along. Anyone's?
Oh man. So Downtown is a favorite.
Downtown, of course.
What else was on there, Nate? Tell me.
There was, Got My Mind Set on You, Puppet on a String.
Oh, Got My Mind.
Always Something There to Remind Me.
All of it. Mitch was probably like, stop singing. Cause I was just singing in his ear. Like, I was bouncing to the music. It was really good.
And there's one Susie and the Banshees song that is not from the 60s, but I believe it was during the Halloween party. So it gets a little bit of slack, but everything else, all 60s or Anya Taylor-Joy covers. That's right. She sang her own singing for two of the songs, You're My World and Downtown. She recorded her own vocals for that. So Mitch, whenever you're in a horror movie, you can record your own vocals and get the Will Smith, you know, the double. You get the acting and the recording.
I'm gonna go full Will Smith and go ha ha and just really like
woo throw a lot of woos in. There's a place you can go. Woo! Downtown. That could have been okay. That drops the movie a little bit because they missed out on that opportunity.
did they?
Did they? I think they did.
All right. Well, look.
We skipped the very last scene. I won't spend long on it, but we see everyone happy, healthy.
Yeah.
You know, she gets her fashion show. Her grandmother and John, who I'm assuming by this point's her boyfriend,
I mean, you got at that her. Point, you got the speed.
I would hope
control.
So.
You got to get together after you go through that. Yeah.
She sees her mom again, looking proud, and then she sees Sandy, and so I guess this means Sandy's kind of, you know, made an impact on her, influencing her life. The fashion show was a lot of 60s stuff, so. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a nice little ending just to see, you know, that they're okay. They didn't die. They're okay.
Wouldn't it have been incredible if they show the fashion show, John's there, grandma's there, everything's great. They finally go back to her place that she's at now and she's with John and they're going to start macking on each other. And then Dinah Rigg comes in a mirror in the room and says, no boys after eight. Like, wouldn't that have been the greatest ending of all time? Wouldn't that have been incredible?
Who says macking on each other anymore?
Macking. It's a 60s. Yeah, oh, it's fine.
On that
note. Snogging. They're snogging. There you go. We're in England. Anyway, I was hoping that would have been
Just moving on.
Mitch just put the drop right over you.
Just moving on. Because of that,
Mitch, you have to go first. So
yeah, you're first now. Yeah, you locked it in.
Oh my God! Jesus. All right, look. I don't want to go first. Every time I ask y'all to go first, you always start. Because
I haven't stopped talking for the last 20 minutes.
So I know. I'm giving the people what they want. Apologize. All right, look. If I think about all of Edgar Wright's films, where does this sit, right? I don't think it's better than Shaun of the Dead. I think Shaun of the Dead is a classic. It is better than Scott Pilgrim versus the World. So there is that.
I love Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Here's the problem.
I don't like the movie as much as I just like the music and some of those fight scenes. That's about it. Like, there's a lot of stuff in between that I don't really care about. But I don't know if that's necessarily Edgar Wright or more just the actual like plot itself, right? Like,
sure.
You know, but all the music's like all the stuff in like all with the bands, great. I mean, pump that into my veins.
Sex Bob Omb. Yeah. Classic.
Yeah, it's great. This is a very good film. Again, executed very well. I don't think you're going to be totally shocked by it, but it's a very good Halloween kind of horror film. You know, it's not so gory or so scary that you couldn't handle it, I think, right? Like, I mean, if you're looking at this versus like Halloween Kills, right? Nowhere near that type of gore and murder, right?
Yes, you're not Halloween.
More on the ghost story side. I'm going to give this
no fluorescent lights were broken and put through someone's neck.
Anya Taylor-Joy doesn't sit around like stabbing one person and then looking at and like, let me grab a different knife. Oh yeah, that one. I like the shankability of that one. I'm gonna go 8 out of 10 downtowns.
I like it.
I mean, Nate, why don't you go? Let's let Lisa close us out. Nate, you go next.
Okay, this movie for me is just getting very close to a perfect score for me. Very high up, high expectations, delivered. Great soundtrack, great acting, great casting. I think you guys brought that up. The casting in this is just very, very good. It simultaneously shows how awesome the 60s were and how terrible it was, right? Thomasin McKenzie is just real good. The continuity of the story is really solid. You feel the progression. It's got that, like I said, Roman Polanski type vibe. Along with a mystery, kind of like a giallo-esque. It's giallo-esque. The trailer is definitely giallo-esque in parts two.
Not the movie very much. This is very much a giallo love letter.
Yeah, you got a giallo-esque mystery right from the protagonist. I mean, it's got a lot going on. It pulls it all together. It's clearly a metaphor, I think, in some ways for mental health and asking for help and not try to go all by yourself. and things can get better if you accept help. I think that was what he was trying to say. And Edgar Wright wrote this story himself too. So this is an original story by Edgar Wright. So who knows? But it's really, really good. I don't... Can I give it a perfect score? That's really close for me. Let me
You do it now.
Let me give it a 9. I'm gonna give it a 9 out of 10.
Oh my god.
Nine out of ten.
It's got its own designated spot, and you jump out and give it a 9.
It's Boo. A 9. I don't know if it's Boo. The perfect fit. I don't know if it's like the top, but it is high up there. It's very good.
I want you to look behind you and look Anya Taylor-Joy in her eyes and tell her this movie
it's
is
hard
because
they're so spread out, but I'll try.
Jesus.
She has really spread out eyes. 9 out of 10 downtowns for me. It was really good. I think the mystery came together well, figured it out a little early, but it was still very satisfying to figure out what actually happened. I think was still useful. Creepy zombie face ghosts. The back and forth between the dream world and the real world was good. Satisfying, I think, conclusion. That was a little bittersweet. I think it had pretty much all the good elements. Great music. I mean, yeah, it's just 9 out of 10. I'm going to watch it again at least 5 times. So maybe it'll probably bump up for me once I watch it with the director commentary, which I hope is coming in the forthcoming Blu-ray. But if not, either way, I'll watch it quite a bit. Really liked it. Lisa.
I don't even know, you guys. Oof. Nate, you always have the scores pulled up.
Yeah, sure.
What's my highest score and what movie was it?
You've given a 10, I believe, to one film. I got to say, off the top of my head, you gave a 10 to Edward Scissorhands, and so did I. So.
Oh, yeah. Of course. That's not shocking.
So, yeah. Is this movie Edward Scissorhands? Oh, man. I don't know. That's pretty close. I don't know. You've given some 8s. And 9s. You gave Quiet Place Part 2 a 9.
Oh, yeah. That was
you
a
gave
good one.
Gremlins 2 a 9.
Okay.
You gave sure. The Exorcist. Sure, The I Exorcist did. And Gremlins 2. Basically the same movie. You gave those both 9s.
If you gave people our scores out of context, I don't think anyone could ever.
I have no idea.
I think if you tried to program an AI to guess what we're going to score or something, it would just break. It would just like settle for
no clue.
You can't, you won't believe which movie Lisa gave a 2 out of 10 to. It was Jason X. So ongoing joke. All right.
That's
so that,
predictable.
That, there's your, and you gave Home Alone a 9. So not quite the most representative movies for this, but yeah, those are some of your higher scores. You gave Tucker and Dale versus Evil an 8. That was recent.
That was a good one.
Yeah, so that's a little bit of the ballpark.
I've liked a few movies on the podcast. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It hasn't been so bad.
Out of what, 220 so? You've liked 8. So that's great. That's good. Those are good numbers.
That's a good odd.
If you look at the averages, if you
about
look at
two months in the past 4 years.
We're going to turn into a stats podcast here. So Mitch's average
rating
for all movies that we've done is a hair over 6. Average rating is a 5.8 and Lisa's average rating is a 5.4. So
it's not so bad.
That's the general trend. Yeah.
That is the most useless stat I've ever heard.
I'm just like, saying.
Out of 200 films, some movies are real good, some movies are real bad, and some movies are in the middle. No shit, Nate.
I'm just saying, on average, though, Lisa's the lowest. That's what we all watch.
I find it funny that I have the higher average, and yet I'm the one that always gets yelled at from people online. They're like, Mitch is wrong. Like, no one ever says that about y'all.
Well, you know, if the shoe fits,
you're wrong.
If the shoe fits.
All right.
Anyway,
Lisa,
so anyway,
what
that's
are we
a
doing?
Big buildup, Lisa, for what score?
You know, it's rare that I want to go see a movie in theaters.
Okay.
It's rare that the movie I want to go see is good, because as we all just saw with the last Halloween movie, that was not good. I loved the music. I loved all the actors, not just the main two women, even though they both did amazing jobs. It's a 9. I can't not. Like, I feel like in a couple of years, like there's some movies that I feel like in a couple of years, if Mitch wants to watch them again in the Halloween season, and I'll be like, please don't make me watch that again. I'd watch this again. I mean, I already know the ending, you know, but it's just the story is so well done. I wouldn't mind. So that's high praise.
I am waiting. I am shocked. I really thought you were going to give this a 10. I can't wait to find out the movie that parallels Edward Scissorhands for you, Lisa. That is my goal now. I want to find the movie.
Wow.
That will do.
Mitch, I already told you Edward Scissorhands was our Halloween movie. We would come back, throw that on the TV while we're sorting candy. So it's going to be hard to find, hard to top it.
So I don't understand that, but I hear you. I hear you tell me that a lot. I don't understand it, but sure.
That's like these Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Edward Scissorhands, a Halloween movie for me.
Isn't the most Edward Scissorhands movie just Beetlejuice?
Yeah.
Is it Beetlejuice? Is that that's the closest one? Don't you love Sweeney Todd? Just any like Tim Burton, Johnny Deppy kind of thing.
I feel like you're about to say something very disparaging about Sweeney Todd. I'm gonna need you to shut the fuck up right now.
I think I fell asleep during it.
God, so. You would. It's all right. We'll watch it together, Nate, and I will wake you up with my singing of everything.
Oh, that's
movie
why you guys,
night.
And that's why
we'll
you guys watch are perfect.
Sweeney Todd.
For each other.
We'll watch Sister Act. It's gonna be great.
That's a double feature for the ages, right there.
Wow. Nate, which one are you bringing to that one? So I'm bringing Sweeney Todd. Lisa's bringing Sister Act. What's the movie you're bringing?
What am I bringing?
Yeah, what are you bringing to the
what
table?
What have we not seen that you're like, come on, guys?
Oh, what have we not seen that we're like,
I don't
come
know
on.
That. I don't know if I want to leave that open-ended for today. I think we need to put some rails on that one. Just, you know.
Oh, man, I'll bring Possession.
I don't know that we're going to be on video this time. Let me just paint a picture of what just happened. Nate backed up in his chair, looked at all the DVDs behind him, was like, what the hell can I subject these guys to?
It's Possession. That's a future episode there for sure.
No, you guys are never mind. Movie night
you
canceled.
Guys are going to hate it. It's going to be awesome. Really excited about it. All right, on that note,
I think that's going to wrap it. Yeah, I think that's going to wrap it up. Nate, I was Lisa to tell them where they can find us. Nate, where can they find us?
You can find us, as always, at TX Pod Massacre on Twitter, Texas Podcast Massacre everywhere else. Give us a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choice. Next week's movie, I believe, should be a listener request. Get your requests in. Call us 346-246-3143. Let Mitch know why he's wrong. Or I just say he's wrong. You don't have to give a reason at this point. Just go for that.
Bonus points if you do it in the Marissa Tomei voice from My Cousin Vinny.
I'm not even going to attempt that.
Oh, damn it. If I throw this out there, will he take the bait?
I can't do it.
I can't. I'm not even going to try either.
Look, Halloween's over. October's over. But is it really over? Not really. Not for me. So the horror movies will continue until morale improves. Sorry, Lisa.
Oh boy.
And we got a bunch of movies, and then, you know, look, we got December coming out. I'm looking forward a little bit. We got to pick our non-horror movie to review for that, and I think there's a couple good contenders.
No problem.
Pretty excited.
I'm on top of it.
Oh yep. Well, I think it's the holiday season, and we got to throw Lisa a bone over here on that one. So I think Lisa will pick the non-horror holiday film, and we will subsequently ruin it and tell her why it actually is a horror film. Can't wait.
Yes, cannot wait. Lisa can wait. She's like, I'm out. I'm out on this.
All right. Well, look. Thank you all so much from all of us here at Texas Podcast Massacre. Thank you so much for tuning in, and just keep telling yourself it's only a movie. Good night.